You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You're listening to Giants Croncast, a podcast chronicling the San Francisco Giants. Featuring Brian Murphy and Doug Brazzoni. Part of FFSN, Fans First Sports Network.
Well, as we spotlighted, Doug, the Giants playing four-game series in Cincinnati hasn't always been a nightmare. And I would say that this has been a pretty fun series, all things considered, as today the Giants will try to go for a series win. That they have been very competitive in these games when usually when we think of the Giants playing the Reds at all, regardless of location, it's like, here we go. Somehow the Reds are going to make the Giants look like toddlers out there.
They've been good. They've been that Tuesday game in particular was great. It was just this back and forth and back and forth, and maybe not great if you like pitching, admittedly, but just the way the Giants kept scoring, the Reds kept responding. It was kind of tense the whole way through. Wilmer Flores had a couple homers. And it was a really fun game. Like, you can't really ask for much more. I don't want every game to be like that. I do treasure the, you know, 2-0 wins, but you know, it's the kind of thing that you watch. You're like, all right, yeah, let's do it.
It was, he tied some Bonds record about total bases in two games in a 2-game span. That was cool.
Right. Bonds in 2002.
There we go.
Barry Bonds, Wilmer Flores. I've always associated them together in my mind. Two iconic Giants with very similar power.
You know, something was going on in Major League Baseball on Tuesday night, though. So the Giants weren't the only team to have a massive scoring barrage or be in a game with a lot of runs scored. They won 11-10 on Tuesday night. The Dodgers scored 10 runs against the Orioles. The Guardians scored 10 runs against the Pirates. The Padres scored 9 runs against the Blue Jays. I should have mentioned that those three that I just rattled off, these were like lopsided wins. And then the Mets edged out the White Sox 11-10. The D-backs beat the Braves 16-13. Then the Cubs demolished the Nationals, who the Giants play next, 17-3. And the Royals beat the Tigers 11-10. And then the Twins beat the Mariners 10-3. So some sort of weird heat envelope was going on across the country because that's a lot of runs scored.
I would like to apologize to everyone for the phrase I'm about to coin. It was a polar scortex.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Holy
shit. Jesus, Doug. Children might accidentally be listening to this. They're not prepared for that level of punnery.
So. Again, I'm very sorry to everyone out there listening. I won't listen to this episode because I can't bear to hear myself say that again. I'm very sorry.
But thank you for giving us an episode title. Those can be tricky. And now I have one. So thank you. Polar score techs aside, Doug, we talked about the Giants being competitive in the series. The big scoring game came after they finished off the game from the night before. And what wound up happening is that Camilo Duvall saved both games on Tuesday.
And he looked really impressive in both of them. He was maybe a little bit shaky at the beginning of the second game, but, you know, it was his second time throwing 100 miles an hour in a baseball game in the same day. So that's to be expected. But he came in and, you know, you would be forgiven for thinking that he might be a little bit off. You know, he's already thrown his inning. It's probably pretty hard on your arm to throw as hard as he throws with the kind of stuff he has. And he came in and he was better than the Reds in both games. So once again, I mean, Camilo Duvall is very quickly making an argument for being the best closer the Giants have ever had. Brian Wilson was excellent. Obviously, Rob Nen, phenomenal. We all loved Rod Beck. But what Duvall is doing, the calmness, the way that he is just dominating in almost every appearance, I don't know that that's happened before. Like, Nen in his good years would be the closest analog there. But, you know, obviously we know Wilson made it dramatic all the time, and that sometimes came back to bite him. Beck didn't have the pure stuff, even, you know, relative to what the stuff was at in the league at the time. And just the way that Duvall can come in and shut down any lineup at any time, it's unbelievably impressive.
I think the question is, are we seeing his ceiling, seeing his peak right now? And if so, how long can he sustain that? That might be a question for someone who doesn't necessarily want to enjoy the moment. Because in the moment, he leads baseball with 30 saves. And I will say, you know, Alexis Diaz, who we talked about when we previewed this series, by wins above replacement, he's been a better closer by value there this season. And he's really tough. But and Duvall getting two saves on the same day, is not pitching in two games in the same day, is not necessarily some ridiculous feat on the way of being like a two-way player. It's just rare that it happens. And I would even say that everything, however you might have thought he looked in the second game, Doug, was like, yeah, he should look like that.
Right.
He's doing two takeoffs and landings in a day, you know, and only about 4 hours apart. You know, he had a 100-mile-an-hour cutter in game one. I think he was throwing 100 miles an hour, not with his cutter, in game two. And now I imagine we're not going to see him for a few days. So I will say that. But it didn't seem like he was exerting any sort of weird effort. He didn't look like a guy who was like pitching back-to-back nights or pitching three games in a row or something. And last year, we definitely did see that, where they used him a little too much and he looked a little out of sorts. It's one of those things, like, as much as we joked about don't make the catcher comps, you know, Patrick Bailey to anybody, I think we have kind of, for whatever reason, as a group, Giants fans, not really gotten into the idea of like, well, where is Camilo Duvall putting himself on the list of Giants closers all time? And I think you're right. I think that's going to be, hopefully that's something you write about on your Substack, Doug.
That's a good idea, because I don't have any other ones.
The biggest news of the week, the Giants winning games and really upsetting the baseball orthodoxy, just it delights me to no end. To kind of piggyback on the discussion we had last week about, or earlier this week, about Shohei Ohtani and trading for him, you can see all the fake trade offers that the experts from ESPN, The Athletic, are offering around. I like that it's always like, well, the Giants have got to step it up, because as good as their reputation is nowadays, turn around, their prospects are still garbage and they need Ohtani more than anything else. You know what I mean? Like, there's that kind of business going around and people can't believe, again, Phillies fans, just incensed that the Giants are good at all because they hate Gabe Kapler so much. But I guess I'm saying all this in service of, like, there actually was somehow, despite the Giants playing lights out, one loss since the All-Star break, is Marco Luciano has been promoted from AA to AAA. Doug, it's the Tyler Rogers thing all over again. A Giant is shoving me in a locker, shoving my words down my throat. That's right. I made it about me.
Yeah. Well, I think we all agree that you have it coming. You more than anyone know that you have this coming. But no, I mean, Luciano's been, he was good in Richmond, though his stats weren't eye popping, but a lot of the more advanced stuff, like I know Roger Munter had a note on Twitter that his strikeout rate there wasn't anything, was a little bit below average, but his swinging strike rate was so good that, that you could tell that the strikeout rate was kind of a fluke. And so the Giants looked at process, and it's not like he was bad in Richmond. His batting average is a little low, but he was walking a lot and he was hitting for pretty good power, again, as a 21-year-old in Double A. And the Giants thought that what he would done was impressive enough to get him promoted to Triple A. So it's exciting that the team's going to have their top hitting prospect, you know, one step away from the majors. Obviously, the rookies have all been a big part of the Giants season, and he might be another one this year, especially with how rough it's been in the middle infield with guys just going down left and right.
He got his first hit in AAA yesterday. It was a really, he just legged out an infield hit, a chopper, but good for him already. First game up and he's getting his hit. The thing that stuck with me about what Roger said was I still see him as being a 35 home run shortstop. I mean, it's, he was basically saying it's not improbable that that would happen, or I would say implausible. It still might be improbable, but but the notion that, oh yeah, Luciano is going to have to move to the outfield or third base at best doesn't seem necessarily to be Roger's thought. And I'm sure he's not alone. I don't think he's any sort of crank. He's actually watching the games. So when you read the fan graphs and the Baseball America prospectus, you know, the national coverage, they are kind of getting either secondhand information or like they checked in maybe with less information. I would put a little more stock in Roger's judgment, and only because I want the Giants to have a five tool guy, and maybe he can be that. I'm just going to dream a little bit on Luciano. The kid's 21 years old. I'm allowed to do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the whole point. You dream on him. He's going to be Cal Ripken Jr. Just in a different orange and black.
When he turns 22 on 9/10/2023, the day before 9/11, that's when I'll stop hoping. I'll just wrap it up.
Right. So, I'll be 22-year-olds are old.
Yep, that's old. All right, Doug. So then let's just predict this. This was something that Brady asked on McCovey Chronicles yesterday. Do you think Marco Luciano will get called up this year?
It's hard to tell. That's a cop-out. I know. Sorry. But I mean, so much of it depends on the health of the guys who are left on the roster. You know, once Tyro Estrada comes back, it's tough to see a spot for Luciano. So it'll have to be before then. But, you know, you'll have to see one more guy go down, but it'll have to be one more guy who goes down in a couple weeks once Luciano's gotten his feet wet enough at AAA for the team to really have confidence in him in the majors, assuming that all goes well. But I mean, it is a possibility at least. And, you know, hey, why not? You're the rookie. Let's do it. Let's just call them all up.
One other part that you didn't mention and is the trade deadline. We don't know what the roster is necessarily going to look like after the trade deadline. And I don't know. There's we were big supporters of David Villar in the offseason, right? And yeah. Not saying like he's going to be a centerpiece of any deal or anything like that, not insinuating any of that, but is he long for this roster, for the 40-man roster, is kind of where I think about with him. And if he moves, there's a spot right away. You got second base, third base, shortstop right there. Casey Schmidt might be due for a demotion if he keeps struggling with the bat, although his defense is great. I mean, maybe Luciano's defense, let's just assume, is not going to be that good. I think there's room there even before Tyro Estrada and without an injury because of the trade deadline. So I want to say in the next 2 weeks, but then we're past the trade deadline. If the Giants trade JD Davis, which is kind of spoiling the next segment for me, like if something happens with the third base guys that's not injury related, then I think there, as long as he's not puking all over himself in AAA that we'll see him in like a month for sure. Maybe even less. Like if he has a hot 2 weeks, you know, right after the trade deadline, I could see him coming up very easily. It definitely seems like the Giants are trying to time this all out. We're like, maybe we can get a youth movement and maybe we can trade a veteran and some youth for an impact player. That might be what they're gearing up for. So I like your leaning maybe, because that's the smart man's way to call it. But I'm just going to say yes. But I don't know when.
I think, and the other thing is the flip side of the trade deadline thing is that the one need that Farhan has said the team is trying to address pretty hard is the middle infield. Mm-hmm. So not to say they're going to trade Luciano for that, but that would be another player who's kind of blocking him, getting in his way, because they're not confident that he's ready yet.
Well, if they can't find the right deal. Yeah, I see what you're saying. If they find a guy who fits, then yeah, that blocks him for sure. Which that's a whole other discussion. And frankly, I don't have AC in my apartment, so I haven't been able to sit there and go, well, who else could they be pursuing? But that's definitely, folks, next week's going to be very much trade focused because that's what's coming up. That's going to be the big news. And maybe this we'll talk about this in this next segment here. Doug, what's something you found interesting about the Giants this past week?
Man, it's just fun to watch Logan Webb pitch.
You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
he's so good. You know, he's had a big, there's been a big difference in Webb's home stats and road stats this year. And so he went out there in Cincinnati. He didn't get the win, but 7 innings, 2 earned runs, struck out 7, walked nobody. Fantastic. You know, no notes. I understand that he gave up a couple of pretty cheap homers, but at Cincinnati, that's going to happen. And overall, I mean, it was just such an impressive start. He's been so good for a while now that any concerns that you might have had at the beginning of the season, you've forgotten that you had them, and you're like, that was someone else. I never doubted him. I'm talking to you, listener. You know who you are.
Neither of us have had any concerns about him the whole year.
Right, exactly. Yeah, not us, obviously. Yeah. That's why we have a podcast. That's why they let us. Brian, what's something you found interesting about the Giants this week?
Well, Doug, I'm glad you asked. I find it very interesting that the Giants bullpen, as kind of weird as it is when you get into the Jacob Junis, Sean Manaea, Ross Stripling, Alex Wood of it all, is still like the best bullpen in the National League, not on the season. If you're just looking at wins above replacement, they're 7th. But I like to use the fancy since May 1st, since, again, that is when shit turned around for them. And since then, they are the best bullpen in baseball. And I think that's something worth discussing because of I just named 4 guys who are somehow, you know, quasi-starters, quasi-relievers, and are really concerning. Jacob Junis' slider the other night betrayed him something fierce. And just he's looked very hittable. Ross Stripling has looked very he's very binary. It's like, oh, they missed that curveball. Oh, they didn't miss that pitch. Like, it's really just a switch off with Stripling. But the Giants bullpen since May 1st, heading into Wednesday, 26-9. With a 2.97 ERA, 4 wins above replacement as a bullpen, 297 innings pitched. Now, obviously, the bulk guys contribute to this innings total. That's the most bullpen innings pitched of any team in baseball. They have the most saves of any team in baseball. Again, they have the most wins above replacement, so the most valuable by the accumulation of metrics. Their ERA team, their bullpen ERA is the lowest. Doug, the second best bullpen by ERA is Cleveland at 3.35. So the Giants bullpen is almost half a run better than the next team. It's like, how? You kind of just, there's a part of you that's like, I don't understand. And then you just look at it and it's just very interesting to me that they are able to continue doing their model, you know, modeling the path for who's going to appear when facing these batters. One thing that we talked about in the first month of the season is the Giants having to adjust their entire model to the new rules to facing every team this year. You know what I mean? Like, there's these little subtleties in the game that changed this year. And we, in the coming out of the gate, it looked like you, an outsider looking in could say, looking at the team could say, oh, do they need to update their models to account for all this stuff? And they, because they didn't have any of the information, they haven't been able to do that. Well, if that's your argument, look what they've done. They had a month of data. They revised their model and it looks like it's worked out pretty well. You know, Taylor Rogers wanted to try throwing a new pitch, didn't work out, and he just stuck with what works. They're picking the right guys to the right spots and they're getting peak performance from all their guys. Tyler Rogers doesn't look great all the time, but then he's still able to throw his rise ball, which I love. Did you see that on Twitter the other day, Doug?
Yeah,
I did. He does throw a rise ball. He does throw a video game pitch. So congratulations to Tyler Rogers. I know that's not Taylor Rogers. We're talking about both of them. But effectively, what I find interesting, effectively, the bullpen is the Giants' strength. And that has been the case since beginning of May. So just find it very interesting. How did they do that?
Yeah, and that's also what coincides with the Giants being good again. The Giants had a really bad month of April. But once they got the bullpen turned around, then that they started throwing them more, which was kind of weird. You know, usually the more you throw a bullpen, the worse they get. But the Giants figured it out, you know, a lot of with their very like careful managing of the guys who go multiple innings, like, you know, Junis and Beck and Keaton Wynn and everyone. But they've been probably the biggest part of the Giants turnaround this year. And they've been really impressive.
Yeah, I guess the sub question to that is, do you think, because by, you know, your own question there, is Camilo Duvall the best closer the Giants have ever had? You know, arguably, is that the reason why they've been so good? Maybe, you know what I mean? Like, you have like a sub portion of your argument now, and, you know, Camilo Duvall might be the best closer the San Francisco Giants have ever had, and he's the reason why they have the best bullpen in baseball, which that is a very quaint thing that gets said a lot. You know, in our lifetimes, oh, they've got the best bullpen in baseball because they've got Craig Kimbrell closing it out, or they've got Rob Nen closing it out, or they've got Dennis Eckersley closing it out. So that's why they have the best bullpen in baseball, right? You give that guy the ball at the end and that's your stopper right there. Well, yes, the Giants have that, but they also have several other guys who on maybe weaker teams would be closers. You know what I mean? Like, remember when the Giants had Tim Worrell in like the seventh or eighth inning? And then they're like, what if he just was the closer? We'll save some money. It'll be all right. And no.
Hey, that didn't go that badly.
It didn't go that badly.
With Matt Hurgis. Right. And that did go badly.
But it's one of those things where it's like the Giants in the old days were like, well, let's just move everyone up a spot. You know what I mean? And now this one's like, let's add guys from the bottom and meet in the middle somewhere where there's some quality all the way through. Doug, anything else you found interesting?
We've barely talked about him. I'm talking about a little bit. Wilmer Flores, he's been great. He's been like one of the best hitters in baseball since the beginning of the month, which good, because he's just about the only one performing at a star level on the offense for the Giants. Like, Conforto over this month has been decent.
He's been nice coming out of the break.
Yeah. But I mean, overall for the month, Wilmer Flores, by far the best. Austin Slater's been good. Blake Sable's been good, though, with that a little bit worrying strikeout rate. Nobody else has been. Luis Matos has had a high batting average, though not a lot of secondary skills.
He's had some really nice swings.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put Luis Matos in the interesting camp here, but just since you mentioned him, you know, the bat speed, drool worthy in a couple of cases in the Red Series. I'm like, oh, look at him get to that pitch. He couldn't do anything with it. Doug, my computer is totally borking right now. Can you go look at Wilmer Flores since June 1st? He's been good since June 1st. Because I just
I've seen that. Let's stall. Yes, he has been. Since June 1st, Wilmer Flores has hit .397, .459, .699 over 85 plate appearances. He has a 10.5% walk rate and an 8.2% strikeout rate. That's 300 points of isolated power by the way.
Oh my gosh. Goodness.
Yeah. So he's absolutely destroyed the ball over the last month and a half.
I think they forgot about Wilmer.
The
other teams. So he's like, I also like his very vague notion of defensive versatility, but he's looked
great.
Solid out there at first base. He's played second base. Has he played it this year? He's played third base a little bit this year, but you know, he's made himself very useful, and congratulations, Wilmer Flores. That's a good one. I really like that.
Yeah. Anything else you found interesting?
Nope.
Okay. Brian, what's something you found concerning this week?
Doug, I'm deeply concerned about my ability to communicate effectively as someone who writes and talks about the San Francisco Giants. We are thankful for people giving ratings and sending us questions. You know, we ask at the end of every episode, give us 5 stars on Apple or on Spotify, right there in the app. And we recently got a new rating on our Apple page. Thank you. But also a comment, which I feel merits a response from WWE Champs Say No, says, get your facts right. But should I give it a voice? No, don't do the voice. Get your facts right. That's the headline. How are you going to say Lamont Wade has been spectacular on defense when he rates below average and doesn't even pass the eye test? Follows it up with Conforto has had a good year. Like what? He's been a terrible signing and also rates negatively in the field. Say Jock has no extra base hits, but Conforto has like 2 more. LOL, do better. All right, I'll work backwards from this. I left all my notes in the other room, so this is just off the top of my head. And hopefully my desire to engage with a comment, doing better, will just guide me through here. Just on the note of the extra base hits in the first half, Michael Conforto had 21 extra base hits. And Jock Peterson had 15. That's literally more. They had 7% extra base hit rate, did Conforto to Jock Peterson 7.4%. I said Michael Conforto had missed 2 years. Doug, I believe you corrected me. He missed all of last season. He had a 105, Michael Conforto, 105 weighted runs created plus after the first half, which is one of only like 76 players in the National League who actually had a weighted runs created plus of league average or better. He was just slightly tick below Xander Bogaerts, this massive free agent signing, right? Are the Giants paying him a lot of money? Sure. But I was definitely making the point that Michael Conforto might be expected or is doing pretty well for a guy who didn't play. He's doing well for a guy who didn't play last year. And here we see him doing very well coming out of the All-Star break. I don't know if that's fair or not, Doug, but that's where I was coming from on that point. But that was all tied to my main point that Jock Peterson needs to hit more home runs.
Right. I mean, just looking at this month's stats, Michael Conforto through Tuesday's games, because we record this before those stats update. In July, Michael Conforto has a 100 W weighted runs created plus. So right at league average. Not you know, great, but fine. You know, sometimes you have months where you're fine. Sometimes you get better. Jock Peterson, through Tuesday's game, has a weighted runs created plus of 38 in July. So, yes, Michael Conforto has been non-trivially better than Peterson in the month of July.
We were only pointing out that Conforto has more of what the Giants signed Jock Peterson to get. The Giants signed Jock Peterson to have a bunch of extra base hits, mainly home runs, but more extra base hits. And instead, the guy who missed a year, who plays the field, and you would think they were like their expectations, the range of expectations for Conforto from the Giants' perspective is different than they were for Peterson. I was merely pointing out, and by the way, I caveated both ends of the statement. If you go back and listen to the episode, saying like, I am crazy for saying this because Jock Peterson has a 120, he's 21% better than league average. As I'm saying this, I'm just pointing out he has not that many extra base hits or many home runs for a guy who was signed specifically to do that. Whereas you would think Michael Conforto and Mitch Haniger are peas in a pod and they're going to struggle and do whatever. And somehow Michael Conforto has more home runs than Jock Peterson. That's not what we expected. That was the main point I should make with that. Let's talk about Oh, one more thing about Conforto. Minus six outs above average in the outfield. Not good. We'll grant you that. Same number of outs above average as Juan Soto and Ronald Acuna Jr. in the outfield. Now, if Michael Conforto could hit like either of them, we'd all take that, right? But I'm just saying, like, what are we talking about here? Michael Conforto is a quality offensive player right now for the Giants, above average, not much above average, but above average. He's again, coming back from missing a full calendar year, and he's on a hot streak right now, which is nice. And that's kind of what the Giants were expecting from him. I think he's lived up to his expectations. Lamont Wade Jr., the idea that his defense is somehow average or stellar. I think I was just making the point that he's been fine there, and he was average. Again, I left my notes in there. I transcribed my whole statement, but go back and listen. I was not raving about his defense. He's been fine there. He has a zero outs above average at first base, minus one in the outfield. I think Fangraph's defensive runs has him closer to minus six. I wasn't trying to make the case that Lamont Wade Jr. is a Gold Glover. I don't believe I've ever said that, but he's been fine there and is a quality first baseman. Doesn't pass the eye test. I kind of think that's subjective. I will say this, Wilmer Flores looks better at first base than Lamont Wade Jr. So if you need me to make some sort of admission, there we go.
I would also add, so a couple things. So Fangraphs' defensive rankings at first base alone have Lamont Wade Jr. at minus four runs, and also exactly zero outs above average, runs above average. So he is ahead of Pete Alonso and Ty France. They're eighth and ninth. That's basically because of playing time. He has about 200 fewer innings there than them, but he has about the same number as Yandy Diaz, who and his numbers are better, so he is basically in that very middle category. He's fine by the eye test. I think he had looked pretty good the first couple months of the year. He's looked worse lately, I think, because he's been playing hurt for pretty much the whole month. You saw him go down on Tuesday, get pulled from the game. They called it a hamstring problem. I assume they're telling the truth, but he pretty clearly hasn't been looking right for a little while now, and that's going to affect you defensively quite a bit. So I think that he had been a good defender for first base. Remember, all first basemen will have negative defensive values on Fangraphs, because there is a massive positional adjustment. That's why Brandon Belt was always a negative defender. But I think he's done a good job. I think I've thought he did better overall in the year than Brian thought. Like, I thought he was good for the first few months. And then once he started having some issues in his lower body, he's certainly been more limited over there. But he's also been better than you could expect. I think he's a converted outfielder. He's athletic. Like, he's not a lifelong first baseman. I think he's done a good job, considering everything he's dealt with. And I will stand by that. So give us a third star, please, on our rating.
Well, it's also, for me, a good lesson not to mention other players when I'm rattling off a list of demands of one player. So
yeah,
to try not to compare them. Doug, is there anything that concerned you about the Giants this past week?
I don't know if it counts as a concern, but the Giants, you know, they had that. There's that nice winning streak, right? I'm not sure how. Like, they have one guy who's hitting really well, a couple other guys who are hitting pretty well, but nothing special. Logan Webb had a really good start. Their pitching has had some rough games. So I'm not sure where these wins are coming from.
It's
I guess the bullpen is carrying them, but yeah, but
it's the bullpen.
You look at what that whole team is doing, like, as a whole, I don't know how they could do it. Well done to Gabe Kapler and Farhan for putting that together.
I agree. And that's why I'm very curious to see what's going to happen with the trade deadline, because it is sort of like, where do you add the player and what do you give up? Like, what's the magnitude of help you're going to get? This doesn't feel like a year that makes sense to get Carlos Beltran. This feels like the John Vanderwall. Can you sneakily get a guy that you can make into Jason Schmidt type of situation. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like one of those years as opposed to the go big or go home years. And I know it's insane to say, oh yeah, just go trade for Jason Schmidt. But at the time, nobody knew that he could. The Giants had this one weird trick to make Jason Schmidt a Cy Young contender. And I think that that's maybe what we should hope for. Maybe, what am I trying to say? Like, I just don't think they're going to like load it up for Chris Bryant type, for a Chris Bryant type. I could be wrong about
that. I mean, there isn't really a Chris. I think there isn't a Chris Bryant type out there who will come at the cost that Chris Bryant did. So what Bryant cost them was one prospect who was going to have to be added to the 40-man when the Giants didn't have room, and then a pitching prospect who was overperforming his talent level. So that was Alexander Canario and Caleb Killian. And Killian hasn't been very impressive. Canario hasn't made the majors. So those are guys who are, it's not that they're bad players, but they're not like those star prospects in your system. And it's hard to see the Chris Bryant type who will take something like that. I mean, if it does end up being Cody Bellinger for a similar deal, you have to think about that. But there aren't that many of those guys out there, I think.
Right. And then if it is a deal with the Cubs again, let's say, Cody Bellinger kind of makes the most sense, but then he doesn't make the most sense. I think it's between he and Stroman. If you were to get both of them, the deal is suddenly huge. If you got two of them, the Cubs are, it's better for them to split, to do separate deals for their players and get the most, maximize the talent that way. And then it's a matter of, as a fan, do you want to see Cody Bellinger in a Giants uniform, maybe hitting a few home runs in a McCovey Cove and making some nice plays on defense? Or do you want to see Marcus Stroman stabilize the rotation? Do you think he can stabilize the rotation? Many questions involving that. Doug, I find JD Davis's season very concerning suddenly.
Yes. Yeah, it's not going well right now.
Since June 1st, 248, 321, 360, 681. Good question to ask. When JD Davis was sleeping on the road, did Wilmer Flores steal his breath? Is that what happened here? Because I brought up the same June 1st stats that you did with Wilmer. And it's like, wait a minute, that should be flipped. That sounds like the other guy. Is it a Freaky Friday situation? Did they both piss in the same fountain during a lightning storm? Like, what happens?
I just imagine Wilmer leaning down while JD Davis was asleep and saying, I was there for you. Now you'll be there for me.
Doug, that's terrible. That's the second time you've made this podcast.
That's the second worst thing I've said on this podcast today.
The Wilmer Scortex. All combined. Okay.
Floortex?
Yes. So JD Davis could have been just doubles or just dingers Davis.
Hey, Brian, I have just doubts about him right now. Third worst thing.
It hasn't looked good, I would say, and the softness of his defense, because that was not his strength, but I would say that the wow, he's really good on defense has faded a little bit. I can't pull up Fangraphs right now, my computer's acting buggy, but he's not an embarrassment out there. It's not like he's regressed so negatively that it's just he's unplayable out there. But now his bat is not picking up any of the slack. He's been a huge disappointment there. He still is working decent counts, but I think his strikeout rate is shot through the roof. And when he is making contact, it's a lot of hard grounders. I don't know what's going on there. It seems like a big question between Tyro Estrada being out, basically on the infield. What you said, Doug, where are these wins coming from? It's like you can look at second, short, and third right now and wonder what's happening. Like, what the hell's going on? Is it really Patrick Bailey and Wilmer Flores and some good bullpenning, and that's really it? And some timely, I guess, Michael Conforto hits, And that's what it feels like right now. And I was hoping, I mean, every baseball player goes through slumps, cold streaks or whatever. And it doesn't look like JD Davis is going to be coming out of his anytime soon. So I'm very concerned about that.
Yeah, it's worrying.
Well, that was fun. The Giants are going to continue their 11-game road trip, four-city road trip, with three in Washington against the Nationals. And then they'll play a morning game on the West Coast in Detroit, morning game our time in Detroit to finish up the series that got rained out there. The Nationals and Tigers are demonstrably worse than when the Giants faced them last time. Remember when the Giants faced the Nationals in San Francisco and the Nationals just kind of boat raced them a little bit? Not the case anymore. The Nationals are in a free fall. They are a rebuilding team. They haven't been that good in a couple of months. The Tigers also were playing pretty sharp when the Giants faced them when they were being terrible, but it doesn't look like, man, I forgot his name already. Scott Harris. Doesn't look like Scott Harris has fixed it in just one season. But I will say in July, they're 500. They buoyed themselves a little bit. In June, they were 9-18, though. And I think the Nationals had a similar record. The Nationals, again, these are both series. If you want to count the Tigers game as a series, that the Giants should win or should have a very good chance of winning. Doug, when we started talking about this road trip, we were like 6-5. That'd be pretty solid. Now you kind of feel like, can they get a little greedy here? If they still wind up the trip 6-5, I think we'll be fine with it. But now you're kind of like, well, 7-4 seems very plausible. Why not go for that? So,
I mean, at this point, 6-5 would be a pretty huge disappointment. They looked so good over the first, you know, several games that you'll look at it overall as a road trip and be like, it's a success. But those last four or five games, you'll say, well, they could have done better there. They could have gotten more wins against teams that are beatable. You want them to do better now. I mean, now you're looking at 7 or 8 wins. So you feel good at the end of it. Cause otherwise it'll just be kind of a disappointment of, well, they should have played better against the Nationals.
I think if they go 8-3, let's just hold out that thought for a minute. Then I think all the fans wanting Ohtani or clamoring for a big move, I think that's justified. I don't know if it can happen, but it's like, yeah, if they go 8-3 on this really tough road trip at this juncture in the season, given their needs, which right now aren't hurting them, and like to the point where it doesn't hurt them that they go 8-3 on this road trip. I think you would want to be like, can we get, God, but who's available? That's the question outside of Ohtani that you would really want. You know what I mean? To give up someone to get him.
You know what we can do, Brian? We can talk about that on the next Giants Croncast.
Doug, you're absolutely right. Until then, where can people find your work?
You can find me at giantsdoug.substack.com, where I write every Tuesday and Thursday about the Giants or about baseball in general.
And I'm at mccoveychronicles.com. You can join the people who post comments on the Apple podcast page. Give us 5 stars if you're so inclined. And if you have a question, we'll answer it. You can add us the question directly at Giants Croncast on Twitter. And don't forget, we're a part of Fans First Sports Network at Fans First SN. We'll be back Monday with an all new episode. Until then,
go Giants.